Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week.
Hey, Sunridge. Good to see you. Okay, be that way. I don't know. It's not really good to see me. All right. I understand. Let's see how it is. Okay, so have you guys ever been, or have you ever thought about how many different ways there are to describe being in a predicament? You know, a situation that seems like there's no way out. I mean, we describe it as being in a pinch, in a jam, in a pickle, between a rock and a hard place, up the creek without a paddle. All describe situations that just seems that there's no escaping. Maybe you have a favorite phrase that you could actually say in church about when you're in a predicament. So think about it. Look at the person to your left and tell them your phrase for when you're in a pickle. Go ahead, do that. Had to think about it a while, didn't you? You ever think that the reason why there are so many ways to describe this predicament that we can end up in is because there are so many opportunities? You know, predicaments are as diverse as the phrases we use to describe them. For instance, it could be a relationship, right? It could be a friend or someone at church or a coworker. Something happened, and now you don't know what to do. If you say something, it might make it worse. If you say nothing, it's probably going to get worse too. It's a catch-22. It could be something that you're facing at work right now. Maybe you're under a lot of pressure, and you don't know what to do to move your career forward, and you just kind of feel like you're between a rock and a hard place. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe you feel stuck right now. All you're doing is fussing at each other, and you've tried some things. You're trying to be nice to each other. You're trying to work it out, but you just keep bumping into the same issues over and over and over again, and you feel like you're in a hot mess. Maybe it's with one of your kids. You know, they're challenging you in ways that you never thought that they would. I mean, you raised them Christian. You dedicated them up here, and you know, the church is going to help you, and they're going to turn out perfect. And now they're not. And you're like, I do not know what to do. I just feel kind of stuck. Maybe you're trying to make a decision. It could be a financial one. It could be about a medical issue that you have, and you just feel like you're in a jam or a real pickle. Now, if you're an Israelite living during the time of Moses, then you'd know exactly what I'm talking about right now, because you have been crying out to God day after day for God to release you from the slavery of the Egyptian king. For the last 400 years, your people have been praying this prayer, but it doesn't seem like there's a way out. There's nowhere you can go. There's nothing you can do. You're just stuck. But along comes a man named Moses. And he's willing to do what no one else could or would do, to confront Pharaoh. And God brings an increasingly severe series of plagues, or as Exodus calls them, mighty works, 10 in all. And the last was a real doozy. Jed talked about it last week. An angel of death in plague number 10 visits the Egyptian people, and no household among the Egyptian people is exempt. From the palace to the most obscure servant, every firstborn son dies. But the Israelites are spared by God. They are rescued by him, and they are protected, it seems, by the shedding of blood of an innocent animal. And you know, if you're an Israelite, you really can't believe it. Pharaoh is finally been persuaded in a miraculous way to let you go. God has convinced Pharaoh It is in Egypt's best interest to let you go. And so you head out. You're free at last. So now, in 1445 BC, with little to sustain you, and pretty much just the shirt on your back, you and your fellow Israelites are heading out to start a new life. So everything's going to be great now. But even though you don't know it yet, you're going to end up in yet another predicament that seems like there's no way out. That's where we are in our study in the life of Moses. And today we're going to capture a big section of scripture from chapter 13 through 14. Now, a couple of observations that are in your notes that I think will help you out in understanding the context of this event. Number one, we don't know for sure the route the Israelites took. I'm going to put a map up on the screen that shows the most likely route the Israelites took. And I don't know if you can see it, but the scholars have done their best to track the travels of the Israelites, but they don't know for sure. And you'll notice that they took a longer route. Where they're actually going is the most direct route would be up the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, up to the land that God has promised them. But in Exodus 13, 17, the writer says that God didn't lead them through the land of the Philistines, though that was a shorter way to go. For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So sometimes God takes us on the longer route for our own good. Another thing we don't know for sure is the body of water that they crossed. You say, well, what about what the Bible says, Britt? I mean, here it is in Exodus 13, 18. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. Isn't that it? I mean, I have no problem if you believe that the body of water they crossed was the actual Red Sea as we know it today. I mean, that crossing, no matter what the body of water was, and that's a spoiler alert on the story. Sorry if I just ruined this section for you. It's one of the biggest miracles in all the Bible, and we're going to get there in a few minutes. But you can see, we'll put the map up again, that if they had gone all the way down to the Red Sea, that would have put them way, way out of where they were headed. And as we read the story through the narrative, we see that it's going to be super difficult for them to hit any of those landmarks that the Bible mentions if they went all the way down there. But then secondly, there's the actual translation of Red Sea in the original language. The literal translation of Red Sea is Sea of Reeds, Yam Suf. It means Yam, sea, and Suf, reeds. And so those reeds are indigenous to almost all bodies of water in that region, and it's used in the Old Testament, this same phrase, to describe other bodies of water. So the Sea of Reeds actually started being translated the Red Sea somewhere in the 14 and 1500s, and it's kind of stuck. What we do know for sure is that God led the Israelites day and night. Remember, this is 3,500 years ago. There's no Google Maps. There's not AAA. But there's no question in the Israelites' minds where to go. Exodus 13, 21, by the day the Lord went ahead of them, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could travel by day or night. So you see it? It's a cloud by day and a fire or light by night, always in front of them. Don't you wish it was that simple today? That, you know, you just prayed, Lord, who do you want me to marry? And then a cloud appears, and it leads you across the campus to the library. And you walk in, and there she is sitting there, and a light appears over her. And that's the one. Actually, I know I'm mixing Bible stories, but it's interesting. That's what happened to Cindy. Something miraculous happened to her because she was denying me a date, believe it or not, until I marched around her 7 times and I blew a trumpet and the walls of her heart collapsed. Actually, she said it was my big pecs that first attracted her to me, but I'm not going to mention that today. But you know, the Israelites, they're not out of the woods yet. Pharaoh starts to have second thoughts. And as Michael read, it seems like Pharaoh's going, what was I thinking? We need this workforce. Can you imagine that all the slave labor just immediately leaves? Every construction project just stops. And the Egyptian people don't want those jobs. So now Pharaoh's in a predicament. But unlike the Israelites, he's not up the creek. He's got lots of options. He has wealth, he has power, and he has an army. And so God leads he led Moses to encamp the people at Baal Zephon next to the sea. It's in Exodus 14:2. And the problem is that this is like the most perfect topographical dead end. They're sitting ducks, and they don't realize it. So if you're an Israelite, when you camp on the shore there in Baal Zephon, you're thinking, this is wonderful. This is amazing. A week ago, we were slaving in the hot sun, making bricks, and now here we are at San Elijo State Beach. We have a beachfront spot right on the cliffs. And you're waking up in the morning, you step out of your trailer, you have your sweats and your slippers on, you're stretching a little, yawning, you're looking out at the beautiful water, drinking your morning coffee, and you're thinking, am I going to walk over to VG Donuts this morning? Am I going to go for an e-bike ride down the coast? Or am I going to surf? Or am I just going to take a walk on the beach? And then you're like, I don't have to decide. I can do anything I want because I'm free. And then, though, you start to hear something. In fact, you start to feel it. It's a rumbling, a vibrating of the ground, because in Exodus 14:6, so he, Pharaoh, once he had his second thoughts, he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. Now, in this time period, in the Bronze Age, the Egyptians are some of the most advanced cultures, civilizations. They have the latest technology, including militarily. And in 1445, chariots, 1445 BC, chariots are like tanks in the modern armory. Here's a picture of one. An archaeologist found six of these, this is where this comes from, in King Tut's tomb. And Tut ruled 65 years after the Exodus. And you can see that there would be a driver and a driver and an archer, and then two horses. Once again, you can see, as we mentioned before, how the Bible is corroborated on history's timeline. Now, can you imagine if you're an Israelite on the shore and 600 of these and thousands of troops are coming at you? If you're Hebrew, you're between a rock and a hard place again. Literally. Because they have an uncrossable body of water behind them, they have two mountain ranges on both sides of them, and they have this fierce army rolling right at them. So to quote Smalls in Sandlot, this is the day they got into the biggest pickle they'd ever be in. So what do you do? If you're an Israelite, well, of course, you stop and thank God for leading you here, and you're awaiting his amazing deliverance, right? Well, in verse 10, Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them, and they were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. Seems reasonable, doesn't it? I can tell you, I don't know about you, but I pray some of my best prayers when I'm in a jam like this, where there's nowhere out, no way out. And at first, this prayer sounds like an appropriate prayer, but very quickly, it turns to blaming Moses. They say, what have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would be better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. And so, on this day, a new club starts among the Israelites. It's the BTE Club. The Back to Egypt Club. And it won't be the last time that this club reforms and voices their fears. You know, sometimes people ask me, like, why do you get into the Old Testament so much? I do because they just seem so real to me. I don't know about you, but I just relate to what these folks are going through. And it seems like people are the same today. It's just the time and situation is slightly different. Now, most of you know what's going to happen, right? You've read the book, which is way better than me telling the story. The book is better, right? But as always, I would love it if there were a few people here that are like, you're just biting your nails right now thinking like, what is going to happen? If you're over 50, you know that Charlton Heston is going to defeat Yul Brynner in just a second, right? If you're under 50, you know that the Prince of Egypt is about to part the waters, right? But I think what Moses says here before this great miracle is absolutely amazing, and it is a true leadership moment for Moses. And I kind of nerd out on these. Do you remember like the moment in Titans when Denzel, the team that he's coaching, they have a big problem with racism on the team. And so he gets the team together and they go on this early run and he stops in the hallowed ground where the Battle of Gettysburg took place. And he addresses them. He says, 50,000 men died right here on this field, fighting the same fight we're still fighting amongst ourselves today. The green field right here was painted red, bubbling with the blood of young boys, smoke and hot lead pouring right through their bodies. Anybody remember that? I just got goosebumps saying that. Or how many of you remember Kurt Russell when he played Herb Brooks in the pregame talk to the Miracle Olympic hockey team that beat the Russians in 1980? And he said, great moments are born from great opportunity. That's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9, but not this game. Not tonight. Anybody? Okay. I could go on. Like in Hoosiers. When Coach Dale, Gene Hackman, gets thrown out of the game and he puts the town drunk, Scooter, played by Dennis Hopper, in charge of the team, and he's got his playbook rolled up, and he's talking about running the picket fence, and he says to them, now don't get caught watching the paint dry. Come on. Those are the best. And, of course, the best one of all, in Talladega Nights, when Will Ferrell says, second place is only first loser. So, thank you for, like, indulging me there for a couple minutes. Because I think what Moses says here tops them all. In Exodus 14, 13, Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance of the Lord. You will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see them again. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still. That is a great speech. Here's what Moses said. One, don't be afraid. Stand firm and watch God work, because three, he will fight for you. And number four, be quiet, which is, it says be still here, but actually, you know what it means? It means shut up. Stop talking. Now, can I point out that what Moses is saying to do here is exactly the opposite of what you and I normally do when we're in this predicament. Number one, we're scared out of our wits. We run. We don't stand. We fight the battles that God is supposed to fight, and we tell everybody about it. We can't find enough people to complain to about. You know, I think that Moses' words still apply to all of us who are living 3,500 years later, and we're thinking we're in a predicament for which there is no escape. And you're thinking that God has just left you there. What happened 3,500 years ago still applies to us right here in the Temecula Valley in 2023. For all of us who feel like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place or up the creek without a paddle. So let me sum up how I think Moses' direction to the Israelites translates to us today. There's a lot of ways to look at this. I realize this is one way. When you're in a predicament from which there seems no escape, you do your part and then let God do his. You do your part and then let God do his. Now, I want to be clear. This is not a spiritual version of fatalism. I'm not saying it is what it is. I'm not saying that God helps those who help themselves. By the way, that's not in the Bible. Let me just break it down. Number one, it means assure that you've done everything that can possibly be done. If you're in a predicament, make sure that you've done everything that you're supposed to do. Look at Israel, the Israelites and Moses. They took the abuse and oppression from which they could not escape. They negotiated with Pharaoh. They packed up their stuff, and they started their journey into the unknown desert. They're totally invested in following the leading of God in their lives, and yet they've done everything that they possibly can do. You know, there's always an interplay between the human and the divine. Remember in the series we did, a couple of months ago called Exponential, and we talked about the loaves and the fishes. Remember when they ran up against a predicament, 5,000 people out in the middle of nowhere with no way to feed them. And the disciples came to Jesus, and he said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And he said, you feed them. And he said, well, we don't have anything. And then Jesus asked them, well, what do we have? Bring what you have to me. And then God did his part, and they distributed it. Remember when David battled the giant, Goliath? He went out in the name of the Lord and in the power of God, but he took 5 stones with him, and he walked out onto the battlefield to face Goliath. Here's the point. We have a part in everything that God is doing in the world today, you and me, as Christians. You know, if you have a big final coming up, you should be sure that you've studied for that final. Every part that you can possibly learn. If you're married, you should be investing in your marriage right now. You should take a class. You should go to a study. You should go to a weekend. You should read books. You should talk with other couples. And if that marriage is struggling, you should get to work on it. You should go to counseling. You should cut off the threat in your marriage completely. You should commit more than ever in that time. And don't start looking at dating sites that are out there, or have a drink with a coworker who understands what you're going through in your relationship. If you're up against it in your business and you need to make a sale, make sure that you're out there making contacts, hustling, doing your job. If you're hoping to get into a certain university, then you better make sure that you have the grades to get in there. So you should be studying. You want healing to a relationship? Then make sure that you've humbled yourself and confessed if you've wronged them and you've left your gift at the altar and pursued the reconciliation as far as you can. Do your part. You want God to use you in ministry, maybe like in second grade Sunday school? Then when you go, make sure that you're prepared. Make sure that your lesson is ready and you have all the materials and show up early and leave late and love those kids and give them the best encounter with God that they could possibly have. You see, doing our part is not a lack of faith. It is an act of faith. And when we think about the parting of the waters in Exodus, we think about that part that only God could do, but don't miss that the Israelites came all the way to the edge of the sea following God's leading in their lives. They came as far as they could go. So if you've done everything that you can do, then number two, then wait for God to do what only he can do. Wait for God to do what only he can do. God actually performs at least 3 things, miracles, if you will, that only he could do to bring the Israelites to this point. Number one, he led them with a cloud during the day and light by night. We talked about that. Exodus 14:19, the cloud was in front of them all day. Then two, he parted the water. Verse 21, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. And the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. And then number three, when God had had enough of the Egyptians' brutal treatment of his people, their oppression, and the murder of his people, he closed the waters on them as they tried to cross. Verse 26, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back into its place. The point here is that when we feel afraid, when we feel like we're out of options and there's no way out, we need to look up. We don't need to blame others. We don't need to join the Back to Egypt Club or be bitter. Instead, we can look up and wait for God to work. And after we've done everything we can, and then we've waited on God to act, when he does, when he opens that door, go forward. Go. Go forward. You know, the problem with predicaments is that they paralyze us. Isn't that true? We just get frozen. You know, there comes a time in our lives when it's time to stop waiting, to stop praying, and to step out in faith. Exodus 14, 15, then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Move on. God promises that he's going to show up, but he also says, you need to get going. Move on. And so Moses raises his staff, and the sea parts. And you know, at that moment, that is a huge step of faith. I mean, that's a miracle, right? But do you think that before Moses did that, before he raised his staff, do you think he had doubts in his mind as to what was going to really happen when he did it? You think that he was concerned at all about looking really dumb in front of everybody and being run out into the desert? And then be honest, if you're just, you know, your everyday Israelite, even if the water parted in front of you, don't you think you'd be a little concerned when you stepped out into that? Like God made a way, but you're not really sure if that way is going to stay there long enough to get you through? What if Moses had never raised his staff and commanded the waters to part? What if the Israelites, once it did, they just stood there and go, oh, that looks too scary to me. Now, am I saying that tomorrow when you go to Costco, all you have to do is drive forward and God will part all the cars in the parking lot? No, probably not. I'm not even sure that God can do that. But I'll tell you what, we all end up in predicaments. We all have hard places, places that seem like there's no way out. But stories like this remind us that God is faithful and that he will not leave us there forever, and that eventually we have to take the next step. Now, our predicaments are as diverse as we are, right? And they just seem to keep coming. I mean, maybe you're here today or you're listening and you're like, man, I've just made a really big mistake in my life. Huge mistake. And I don't know how I'm going to get out of it. I don't know what's going to happen to me. And I really don't know what the next step is. Some of you, you have a medical problem with no good choices. And you're trying to choose from among those choices. And you're like, none of them look attractive to me. Some of you are just so stressed out. Life is just like, man, you're just pinned all the time. And like, you don't see a way out of your stress. It's like, how do I get off of this hamster wheel? from everything that I have going on in my life. And some of you are in a financial pickle, where you're like, you know, like a lot of stuff has happened, and you know, you're like, how am I gonna rise above this and get through this? We all have predicaments, and some of them are really gnarly. And yet we have this story. I'm going to ask the band to come up. And I don't know about you, but I wonder, like, why does God let this stuff happen to you and me? I mean, I became a Christian. Isn't, like, everything just supposed to get all lined out after that? And, you know, it's going to be all joy and perfectness. Seems like sometimes being a Christian brings more predicaments to my life. You know, I don't know how much cause we have in it. Sometimes it's our fault. Sometimes it's just the world is broken. Sometimes I really feel like God actually brings it, drops it in my doorstep. Something bad happens because you did the right thing. Why does God do that? I mean, what? I don't know. I don't have the mind of God, but like, what's in it for us? I think that God wants us to learn to trust Him. He wants us to trust in His plan and who He is and His character. You know, the end of this narrative concludes verse 31 of chapter 14 of Exodus. It says, when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant. Something about being in that crucible, that you can only get there. The kind of trust that comes through that predicament, that quagmire, that pickle, that jam, that mess that you're in, can only be found there. And the Israelites, they, number one, they did everything that they could do. And then they let God do what only He could do. And then they did move on, right? They took the step. They went forward. Now, that's not a formula. I'm not saying, hey, do my three little part sermon and everything will work out. That would be ridiculous. But these are general principles, right? These are general ideas that we see kind of like bubbling to the surface of God's interaction with real people a very long time ago. And what the Israelites are learning to do is to trust God. And if you know the story, they're going to need that in the future, right? Trust, as I've been saying, is a learned behavior. It's like we take a step and we learn to trust, and then we take another step and we learn to trust, and our trust builds. It's like a muscle doesn't grow or get stronger unless it's exercised. And I know a lot of stories. I know my story. And I know that I'm constantly in those places where I have to wait for God to act, and I have to step forward. I know you guys are too. I hope that this part of what a very long time ago got written down and preserved for us to look at. The Apostle Paul said that these stories are written so that we can see what God does. They're given as our examples so we can learn from others. And I know we're learning on our own. It should bolster our faith. You know, the other thing that we've been saying that the story of Exodus is a story of, it's like becoming a Christian. You know, if you're not a Christian, you are in a desperate situation. You are stuck. And you know, there's no way that you can get out of your sin condition. You are up the creek without a paddle. And yet God, 2,000 years ago, sent His Son to rescue you and I from our sin. And the only thing that God asks of us The only step we have to do is to believe. And then God does all the rest. That's the story. That's the Christian story. It's the story of the Exodus. The children of Israel, desperate, cannot save themselves. God saves them over and over and over again, we're going to see. He comes through. He rescues them. And then he puts them in the place that he wants them and tells them how to live in the Ten Commandments. We're going to study that this summer. So if you're not a Christian or you're on the bubble or you have questions about it, I hope you talk to your friend or me or another pastor, your home group leader, your Sunday school teacher, whoever, someone that you know is a Christian, and you say, like, man, here's my questions. What can I do to accept the rescue that Jesus has given to me? I hope that you'll do that, because you can't do it on your own. That's what the Bible tells us, and that's what we learn just by living life.
Hey, everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.